Now, this is a two-computer meeting?
Always.
Really?
Mm-hmm. I realized that the recordings were shutting off when I was typing, so I've got it. There's a whole thing I do on Friday night.
Oh, my God.
Now wow.
Thank you.
And there's no signal here, so you can't.
Huh? Actually, there is, but I haven't
got Sam,
it.
Sam,
yeah. Did you write down what the SBCC router password was from the last meeting?
No.
At the...
That's the router subcommittee and your chairman.
I need to take it home and think about it. I have no reception whatsoever.
You'll get back to it.
Or try and have a meeting before next year. I guess I better get it.
Enough levity.
If you want to call it that. We gave proper notice by email and circulated the minutes. Does anyone have any corrections to last month's minutes?
I just have one question about the water district report. Who's Katie?
Who's
what? I thought that's who gave the report.
Oh, Sandy Cross.
Oh my gosh, how embarrassing. Okay, correction noted, thank you.
With that correction, are the minutes approved? All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you, Maury.
The treasurer's report, Sam.
This is the report ending on November the 30th. We began November with a balance of $28,100. We had expenses of $1,854, leaving us a balance of $26,245.
We're becoming a money-making proposition.
Mm-hmm. And that was as of November the 30th. There is an additional $850 that came in the meantime, but that'll be on the December report.
I don't think you should make comments like a money-making proposition. Because
you're right.
Seriously. I don't mean it as a, it sounds like a criticism, but it's not. We've got this looming big expense coming up with the having to hire outside people to help us write the community plan. And we don't want to scare off people too much. We're sitting in a pot of money. Why are we doing fundraisers? That's why.
I'm properly chastised. Thanks, Terry. No, seriously, he's right.
It's my pleasure.
I think down here about volunteer ambulance corps. I'll need it again. Do you have a report? Oh, more?
No.
How have we done in contributions in response to our fundraising level?
$3,000 ahead of last year.
Great.
Which is what our budget is for stashing away the funds to hire a planner for the community plan. So we're on target.
Right. Any old business? Nothing on the agenda. Any new business?
Yes.
Pamela.
It started on the next door thread. And it started because PG&E sent out a letter to all of us homeowners stating that they were going to come around and repair the corroded, damaged, and dangerous telephone poles at their own expense. And so several people contacted PG&E to make sure that their particular telephone poles were being addressed on their particular. And it started a dialogue with PG&E about the whole issue, about the telephone poles. And that morphed into a discussion about the danger of the loose power lines all over Stinson Beach, right? And especially with the findings and the arguments heading toward court about PG&E's culpability of not maintaining their own power lines and whether or not that led to the wildfires up in Sonoma. So other people joined in the discussion. I think, Sam, you said it'd be nice not to have the unsightly wires strung across downtown. And other people started pulling reports and data. Well, meanwhile, PUC had come out with a report about the danger areas of the North Bay in terms of wildfires. And they had it coded from green to yellow to orange to red. The whole coast of Marin County, including us, of course, is red.
Yeah.
Right? Most, the vast majority of District 4 is in green, or is in orange. So I sent that report to Rodani's office, and his aide immediately called me. They hadn't seen the report.
Mm.
And she said, one, thanks for sending, and two, we understand there's some concerns out of West Marin about the power lines. I said, oh, yes, it's on Nextdoor. And she said, well, we don't have access to Nextdoor. Could you send me the thread? And I said, of course I could. So I sent it to her, and she called back like 20 minutes later. And she said, okay, I can see the danger in the village itself, in many of the other villages, but in Stinson, about these power lines. And PG&E is saying it has not maintained the poles well. And they have identified some, but what about others that they have not identified? And she said, this really does seem to be a pertinent health and safety issue. And I said, well, I think the real issue is who's going to pay for it. PG would love to have somebody else besides them pay for it, with this looming death coming from the firestorms, and she agreed. And I said, does the PUC report help you? And she said, well, we're looking at that. Because, of course, Stinson is not the only community faced with this. Every single community on coastal Marin is faced with this danger. And so John Lepton, I can't remember when you left it. This is John Archibald, by the way. He's a neighbor. He's right up the same part of the village I am. And he leapt in, and I really appreciated his cogent remarks. By the way, I forwarded the thread also to Jeff. So anyway, I want to introduce John to us. He's never been at a village meeting. We're happy he's here, and he can offer some insight.
I think you just covered it all. Hi, my name is John Archibald. Quick introduction. I'm the person that bought Eileen Johnson's place, and bought that 4 years ago, and I'm living there full-time now since February. And I love the place, and anyway, long story short, as Pamela was mentioning on Nextdoor, this discussion, I think it originated with this pole on the corner here.
It was our pole.
Right.
I talked to Canby, the Canby people, asked them, what's the deal with the pole and the rest of the poles here? And they told me, well, we'd like to fix all the rest of the poles in the village. They're all rotten. They all got big beetles. Huh? And they all need to be corrected. In fact, they showed me the one across the street by the painting gallery. It was leaning. And it's leaning at about 65 degrees. It's ready to fall down. And they told me, well, the telephone company's supposed to come out and fix that up this week coming up. They came back twice. They were there 2 days. There was a total of 15 men working and about five trucks working on that one pole. And they said, well, you can guesstimate how much it costs per pole. I figured about 120,000, maybe 150. Maybe I'm being too conservative. Maybe it was 200,000. But they told me that PG&E was sending them up to Santa Rosa because of the demand up there. They would come, and they were going to come back. They said, well, they just terminated our contract here in Stinson Beach, and now we're going up to Santa Rosa to start working up there, and we're supposed to come back here after we finish Santa Rosa. Well, Santa Rosa, Sonoma, Napa require years of work. When are they going to come back? And in the interim, there was a lady that also posted something about how they chopped her pole down 4 feet. The first 4 foot came off like almost immediately, cracked with a little bit of with a little pushing by one of the linemen. And she'd been the first person in town that had complained to PG&E about her pole issue. They used to notice that it was shaking the wind. And I don't know who that lady was, but I'll leave it at that, Mr. Archibald.
Okay. So,
John Archibald anymore.
Yeah, yes. No, so that it basically started with that hole. And I drove by that day, and I was amazed by how big the crew was and how many utility trucks they had. And I thought, wow, it's really expensive. And then I saw the thread on next door, and then I thought, why don't we pause for a moment and take a look at the cost of replacing these poles versus burying them. And then that really got the discussion going. And then there was another woman.
Right.
I don't remember her name.
Right. I don't even
remember.
She
contacted PG&E.
Yes.
You made a suggestion that maybe she should come here and kind of lead this.
And she couldn't.
She couldn't. So then I thought, okay, well, I'll step in just to keep the discussion going. I'm new here. I don't want to rock the boat or anything, so I don't know what
you can drive it. Don't
move. Stepping over any boundaries. I don't want to disrupt things.
Oh, please do.
Oh, come on.
Well, I hear what John's saying. I feel the same way because we have issues with PG&E too.
Mm-hmm.
So I get it.
And
they're a big power and it's scary. So I hear what you're saying.
So there's a lot of reasons why. And I think just there's an opportunity to stop and let's look at this and see if it's feasible or not. Mm-hmm.
I think that it introduces the idea which I've long thought. What about undergrounding?
Yeah,
that's
well,
talking about.
That's Sam did some research, and you came up with what 2,000 per foot?
Yeah, I think it's 1.5 million a mile on Earth. It's, the Chronicle had this article on it.
Right, but that was
urban. Had that quote 1.5 million per mile in urban areas.
In urban, yeah.
Maybe a less than I don't know what we're.
Now, many years ago, Roger Hurt was still alive and facilitator. So a long time ago. We came up with this idea as well, of doing undergrounds, mostly for aesthetic reasons.
Mm-hmm.
It was way before the wildfire stuff comes. And at that time, it was PG&E was quoting to us $25,000 per parcel. And that ended it right then and there. Because many of us might own, but we don't have $50,000 to toss to PG&E. And again, mostly it's for aesthetic reasons. Now this is health and safety issue.
Sure.
So it seems this is an appropriate form.
Yeah, I think
yeah.
So the timing's right. So I contacted PG&E again, and I spoke to the woman that I guess everybody else has been speaking to. She's, I think, I don't know exactly what her position is, but it's kind of a public relations type job for pole replacements. That's all she covers. So when I explained that we are interested in possibly burying all the lines, she said, well, that's called a Rule 28 project, and referred me to a website to explain the process. So it's not necessarily that PG&E will end up paying for it all if we go that way. There's a possibility that the county and potentially the state can help pay. So I think that's, in a nutshell, where it stands at the moment. I called the woman again yesterday. She didn't return my call. But the previous time I spoke to her, she was going to escalate it to the right people because they were going to contact me, and I was just going to help facilitate getting somebody from there out here to address it and then pick up from there.
If you can get a representative to come to the meeting, we'll publicize it and probably get a bigger turnout.
Yeah.
We could even consider a special meeting at the community center. Sorry, John, didn't mean to cut you off. Beth?
I did a fairly serious remodel on a house on a hill back in the 90s, and I wanted to underground the wires. But I would have had to pay for every house between me and the downtown area. I would have been responsible for it.
They can do a special assessment, and it can be 10 years, 15, 20 years where you pay something each year toward it, which makes it more manageable.
Right. That was explained in the process.
What we're hoping, I think, with the PUC report and all the knowledge of how dangerous these wildfires can get and so rapidly, there been no warning. All it takes is a dry day, a lot of wind, and down power lines. That I'm hoping that Rodani and the other supervisors that are impacted can help with the PUC report to get state funding, federal funding, because this is really timely. People are quite aware now, where they might not have been before. Whoever thought Coffee Park would go up? I have a friend with one of the 14 remaining houses, but she can't move back in. She's had cancer twice. The contaminant issue is very real. And her oncologist said, rent it out. You cannot
kill somebody else.
Somebody without cancer, with no children.
Sure, the world.
Yeah. It's unbelievable. No, but I mean, that's how dangerous these wildfires are. It's not just losing the homes, it's what it does to the environment and the community around it.
Well, we have a meeting scheduled for January the 6th. That's our next SBBA meeting, and then February 3rd. If that person from PG&E Community Outreach is available, let Lisa know, our secretary, and she can distribute it to the board, and maybe we could put her on the agenda.
Sure.
Either here or at the community center.
I think we might have.
We could meet at the the hall, if the demand warrants it.
The other thing is we can get the information report and have a follow-up meeting.
And
are you going to?
Donnie's office then.
Will you take the lead, John, or Pamela?
We can. I'm not here. I'm working these two jobs. I'm exhausted. I mean, John was saying he never sees me. That's right. I'm never in the village right now. But yeah, I'll teach you the ropes about how the.
I have a suggestion. Yeah. We come up with a title for John.
No. Does John want a title?
Special investigator.
No. That he is representing the representative of the village association authorized to deal on our behalf with this issue.
Utility.
So he's not just one of the neighbors.
We need a committee.
John, do you even want that?
Well,
don't ask that.
I am particularly sensitive because we've had so many issues with PG&E, and it was very disruptive to our personal lives.
Right.
So I am sympathetic.
My personal interest is, I'd like to have buried. I have a background in infrastructure work, so that kind of helps. But I'm new here. I don't have any connections, political connections, as you guys do. So
we are your political connection, by the way. That's what
so,
we do.
I can help facilitate getting PG&E here. And then they have, it's a very clear process they have, and they assign somebody, I don't know what their title is, project manager or something, and they basically facilitate the entire process. I don't mind being kind of the go-between, but I think that's how it falls out. They even coordinate a public hearing before any decisions are made about assessments of, you know, adjustments to billing and anything like that. I don't know what the general appetite is in the greater community. Sure, I'll volunteer to.
If we set up a subcommittee.
No, we'll have an ad hoc committee.
An ad hoc committee. I'm glad to be the board representative on the committee. Lisa, do you want to? No, you don't have time either.
I'm happy to help with this particular topic.
Right.
Yes.
John, Pamela. So I move we set up an ad hoc committee to address safety of power lines, and potential infrastructure improvement with PG&E. Wait a minute, John.
I second that motion.
Well, did I cut off discussion too soon?
No.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, so let's swap emails. One last thing. Twice I've told Rodoni's office that if they give me a name, I'll put him or her on Nextdoor. So you, if you want to tell that woman to contact me.
I'll be happy to. Yeah. And then you and I can negotiate about getting Sandra Banta off, or Susan Banta off my cell phone for next door.
Nah. It's amusing.
I want it on record.
Wait, I don't understand that, so explain it to me.
But it's personal.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
Yeah. Last thought, John?
I posted that thread also in Tam Valley. I live in Tam Valley as well. And it morphed into another issue, and that had to do with the fuel loads and the unimproved lots, specifically in one area between West California and the homes located on Highway 1. There's a large strip of unimproved lots there that stretch from Loring all the way up to the West California turnoff. And then on the other side of the street, the eucalyptus trees that stretch from Shasta. Eucalyptus pine and pine, they stretch from Shasta all the way up to Erica Way and further up to Panoramic, that eucalyptus grove. We did form a group there, and we're cooperating with, participating with SMFD, as well as the North Bay CC, and a number of the homeowners, and we have the TCSD people too, the Tam Community Something District. The question of underground utilities there kind of died because of the mean income in Tam Valley. So it's a little bit less than this area out here, but it's the fuel for us, and the Diablo winds that we experienced here the night of the fire in Napa was scary. The smell of smoke was pervasive, and it seemed like we were having a fire here, but we weren't, thank the Lord, but. We have the same winds, we have a fuel load, and I've been cutting down all the bushes and trees over there at one Belvedere. I'm stuck with the big pine and the other tree over here. And it's kind of, it's a heavy build to try and remedy. It's $5,000 to $7,000 per tree. And we're seeking volunteers, we do have by the way, Bolinas has a much greater problem with fuel loads within the community. I know we're covered by the state park and surrounding us, so we can't do anything about the surrounding fuel loads other than pressure Montana State Park to clear some of the accumulated fuel loads. I don't know when was the last fire here in Sensimation. Do we have an idea, any great fire here?
I don't think there has been one. I know a little bit about wildland fires. I was involved in the Oakland fire. The fuel load in Mill Valley is higher than the fuel load was
75 years ago. We had our last great fire.
But for our reassurance, fires don't generally burn downhill. Grass is a very low fuel load, so to the extent we're surrounded by grass, that's good. I guess the entree would be down the canyons or something like that. But we're in pretty good shape absent a northeast wind. Now, you're talking about something different, a fire starting in town because a wire goes down.
Well, also the Mount Vision fire, I don't know if you were here, it did burn to the sea. And the people on the seaward side, the Mount Vision fire was up there, they thought they were safe.
No, the winds will drive it down. That's what I'm saying. But generally, we have those winds 5-6 days
a year. And underground utilities, there is a couple streets over off Arroyo, I think, that have underground utilities.
Well, think of Seadrift. Wouldn't it be nice not to have overhead wires?
But why don't we stir after the ad hoc
Okay, let's move on.
Yeah.
Sorry, I got the fuel load button.
I don't know if this belongs in new business or in traffic, but Highway 1, it's December. I have not seen anything but Highway 1 opening, even one lane. Do we have any new information since November?
I don't.
I looked on the culture and said, just the other day, there's no new update. I know they were shooting for December.
Well, we'll find out. Maybe if you find out, you can put it on next door. Community reports. Art Contemporary Marin, I don't see representative. GGNRA, do we have a report?
Yes, we do.
Good.
Okay. It's a little lengthy, so hang tight. The first thing is the Junior Lifeguard Sensational Summer 2017. 60 junior lifeguards, 12 fully certified as lifeguards, and 3 alumni hired as BRP Rangers. Accessibility project in the picnic area and ramp to beach is completed, functioning well, and contributed significantly to national recognition for GGNRA, welcoming all to parks. Winter preparation. Maintenance crew is monitoring situation in lots to make any adjustments to minimize flooding or surge impacts. Key staff changes. Chief of Natural Resources Daphne Hatch is retiring. Key figure for the Bolinas Lagoon TAC. And Steve Ortega, former liaison to the SBVA. Changing agencies at the beginning of the year. Both have been real leaders in the GGNRA and will be missed. For your 2018 calendar, Earth Day 2018 is going to be awesome. April 21st marks the centennial of the Dipsy Women's Hike, and there will be a special race that day from Mill Valley to Stinson on the Dipsy. Plus, coast cleanup, plus Earth Day activities. Hold the date. National Park Service staff met with Stinson Beach Water District Board to introduce themselves and discuss projects ahead and see how to work together if possible. And then it says here, King Tides are coming to California, and I think this is a King Tides project. So December 3rd, 4th, and 5th, and January 1st and 2nd. The King Tides project helps them visualize how sea level rise will impact lives. Everyone can help document the highest high tides of today, which preview the average tides of the future. It's easy to participate. Just pick up a location, take your photo, and share them. Photos will be used to communicate about the effects of the flooding and spread awareness about the importance of protecting communities now. Add your photos to the Flickr pool to make sure that you can be used in the future planning and education. Please also share them on social media at hashtag KingTides to get immediate visibility in your community. All of this will be posted. Stuck inside, live in land, or want to share King Tides with your classroom, California State Parks will be broadcasting live on the morning of December 5th from several locations up and down the coast. Watch King Tides on your computer screen on the park's Periscope channel from 9 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. as they travel from Cardiff to Prairie Creek. Last thing, head out solo or join a group event. Check out the following events, which will be posted at the California King Tides website for updates, or plan your own. However, if you choose to participate, please save as you observe the high tides and watch out for those shorebirds that may be taking refuge further up than usual. Report from Mia Monroe, NPS Park Ranger.
Thank you, Lisa.
You're welcome.
About John? Your Woods Park Initiative.
Not sure we'll hear about it.
Do we have to address that?
Let's wait till next spring.
Let's see what happens.
Bolinas Lagoon Advisory Committee. Anybody know anything about that? Friends of the Libraries? No friends here.
Well.
Bolinas Stinson Union School District?
Yes. The population has remained stable for the school district, which we're pleased. Hopefully it will go up a little bit in the spring as some of the students eligible for pre-K get older and suddenly start qualifying for spring. We're looking forward to that. And there was a holiday fair yesterday that was very well attended. People had one.
I understand that the school district is spending $40,000 per student over here at the Wolf Lane Lane Stinson School for their annually for their education, I imagine.
I can go check it out. I don't believe it is.
I think it's, well, it's both schools together, it's like 25,000.
Right.
It's the,
right.
Probably the highest in the county for sure. But it's primarily because it's, you know, it's a grandfathered in as a, you know, not as per pupil population, but as a, their tax base.
Yes.
So however many students there are, they still get the same amount of money. And
yes.
If there's fewer students, it's more.
I got a conversation with a mother that took her two kids out of that school, and she said that they weren't learning anything, and she actually moved to another school district here in Marin to put her kids in that school, and she got her children tutors, and she was complaining about the amount. She said she had to spend a lot of money to re-educate her children, that their experience in that school with teaching quality was.
Well, let me observe, John. That's perhaps a discussion I have with the school board or at their meetings, and not something that we at the Village Association get involved in. And I know there have been years of discussions about that.
I would like to say that my daughter's graduate of the Blaine Stinson School District. She's a straight-A student at TMI in her second year, and I thought the education was excellent. There were certain areas that were a little, perhaps, you know, not as strong, but she's done very well. She seems to have benefited from the school.
When I was in seventh grade at Blessed Sacrament School, the nun told us that fish jumped out of the water to get air, and that was science.
They don't?
The same school.
Pardon me?
They don't do that?
I go...
go.
Anyway, I think that's a topic to bring up with the school district.
I think you are saying those nuns are all... Anyway, okay, let's see. Village Green, any report?
No report.
Thanks, Al. Seadrift Association? No report. Stinson Beach Community Center?
Well, we had a meeting, and we lost our funding. Beth, can you help me with this? Or were you at that meeting? Anyway, Mary, the long and the short of it is Mary is writing a letter to Redoni explaining how important that funding was to us and how much we
would like it back.
Steve liked us better.
Who is the funding
what
from?
That's what she does.
It was
know.
An annual grant that
yeah.
the county gave the community center every year, $25,000. It represented, was it 30?
11%.
I thought it was like more 30.
Well, I don't know.
Right. Some it was some bickering. Substantial portion of our budget that was lost because the grant was not, we didn't get it because it didn't appear on Redoni's wish list when the budget was submitted to the Board of Supervisors for approval. So it was an oversight, and we don't know if it's going to be reinstated or not. Every year that the community center received this grant, it was with the caveat, you may not get another one.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't a shock, but it was a surprise.
Was Redoni even aware?
No.
So Mary wrote a letter detailing exactly what the community center does, like funds the church, you know, lots of things. All the maintenance.
The community center owns this land from the bridge that goes to the Matt Davis Trail and a little bit beyond it, all the way down to Highway 1. It includes the chapel, the hall, and the firehouse. That's community center property. And it is incumbent on the community center to maintain all three of those buildings, which is no small expense.
Well, let's... Yes.
I'm just wanted to ask how they did with the fundraiser last month.
The Doc Fest?
No, the annual appeal.
Yeah, the Doc Fest. How did that go?
And the appeal. They did the fundraising last month.
Wasn't the Doc Fest to benefit the community center?
It does.
Yes.
But I don't know the specifics of that. Do you, Sam?
I don't think we received the final accounting.
Community Center Board gets it from the Doc Fest committee.
I see. We don't know yet.
There were expenses for the Doc Fest, and there was income from it, but we didn't get a final accounting.
Next month.
Well, those of you in contact with the Community Center Board, what's going on, let us know if there's anything we can do with Rodoni or otherwise to address the shortfall. But it sounds like we need more information.
As I understand it, I think it's up to the individual supervisors who they put in their wish list. So
that's right.
Any lobbying with the rest of the supervisors or the county directly really don't have any impact.
Well, that's right.
He doesn't put us on his list, we're not funded.
Right.
Well, let's hope.
He's aware now.
Stinson Beach Disaster Council, Volunteer Ambulance Corps. It's Catherine. No, yeah.
Well, we did have a disaster meeting on Tuesday.
Fabulous.
Last Tuesday, we had a better than average turnout, although... how many of you guys were there? Anyway, it was good, and we on Panoramic are taking matters more seriously and doing walkabouts of the neighborhood so that more people know their neighbors and know exactly where things are shut off. Which we just need to have more full-time residents, not Panoramic per se, but problem with the Cayes and the Patios is, and Seadrift is there aren't very many full-time residents.
Just to add to what Annie's saying, we have the map in color of each of our houses, and next to our house on the map is our name, our phone numbers, and our cell phones, and our house number. So that every single resident knows who every single neighbor is and how to reach them. It's pretty impressive.
Who has that?
Panoramic.
You guys put it together?
Charles Hobson.
Yeah, we had a neighbor.
I have a copy.
Is this something that you could download from the web? Is it in a PDF format?
It's only of Panoramic. It's not of
It was done by one of our neighbors.
Yeah, he did a Google map.
And
right?
We can't give it out like it is because it's all private information.
Oh, yeah.
But I can show you because you can't memorize it that fast.
So at one time, wasn't Richard putting together a map of the entire town?
He did.
Town?
He has something from surveyors' maps.
Right.
And yeah, I think you have that. I think I gave you.
But
copies.
It was incomplete.
Well,
did he ever finish it for the town?
No, he didn't quite finish ours. But ours is pretty.
Yeah, ours is good. But I just, to Maury, I think where you're going, it's, you know, where's the information for the rest of the town? Is there something that we can build off of and not start over?
The disaster council has the master map.
Okay. So
and aren't there neighborhood representatives?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And those representatives, if you can identify who it is, could get mobilized to do the same.
Right.
Yeah, Kenny has the master map that shows every resident where the propane tank shutoff is, where the electrical shutoff is, where the water shutoff is. So in case of disaster, the neighborhood liaisons could go around and check those things to make sure that they're properly dealt with.
John?
The first day of the Labor Day weekend, our 30-year-old propane tank, which has never was repainted for 30 years, it wasn't ours, it belonged to the McPhails, it rusted out right at the tip of the front. There was a little growing deposit of rust right at the tip. You never noticed it, but it started emanating propane gas. Margaret, proprietor, smelled the propane gas called me. I told her to shut off the tank and to look for a leak. I thought the leak might be in one of the feeding tubes. Well, the leak was right in the tip. She did find it. I told her, call the fire department. She called the fire department. The fire department came. And apparently, they had no background in in learning how to deal with a propane leak from a tank. So they set up a sprayer to dissipate the gas with a fog spray of water. That didn't work. When the McPhails did show up, luckily they showed up about three hours after that. But they said the best way to do it is to put towels, wet towels, on the portion of the tank that's leaking. Put wet towels there, and I'm not sure what that does. Maybe the water that runs down carries the gas solid to the ground. Propane does stay on the ground, but we could smell. It could be smelled up to the second floor, and inundated the second floor. Scary,
yeah.
Especially when there's a house full of clients on Labor Day. There was a mass evacuation. I just thought I'd mention that. You have to watch. You have to look at your propane tanks. I would paint them. Paint them with a Rust-Oleum. Paint the tanks because they do rust. And basically the shell isn't really that thick. It's not really thick. It just gives you the appearance of being thick because when you wrap your knuckles on it, it seems hard, like a hard surface, hard impenetrable surface, but it is penetrating. Can't be penetrated by rust.
Well, the good caution is check for rust.
Do the propane tanks owned by McPhails or
McPhails.
The other company?
Well, the other company, too, owns its own tanks.
You can either buy the tank or rent the tank.
Yes. So whose responsibility is to maintain this?
It's never supposed to maintain. They never maintained it. We have a new tank now. It's a much smaller one. They brought that night, they actually saved all the gas in the tank, drained it to the new tank that they put in, and we had to build a new pad for the new tank.
So the long and short of it is the propane company owns a tank, but it's incumbent upon the owners to check and make sure that they're in good shape.
It only took one man to pull out a tank, which was about 10 feet long. It was 10 feet long and about 3.5 feet high. Three and a half feet in diameter. And a big tank. He has a lift on his truck, and it goes over the fence and grabs, comes in the tank, pulls it up,
you're right.
And he put the second tank in.
So the caution is check your tank.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Good discussion.
Yeah, I want to. Let's keep it rolling. Thank you, John. Historical Society.
The lunch is Friday.
Good report.
Medical center.
That's me. Gabriel Clapman is our new medical doctor. He will be coming on in January. He will be in Bolinas one day and in Point Reyes two days. He's going to be a new papa, so he's going to take off in March for a couple of months, but we're lucky. He's interested in integrative medicine. He's rented a home in San Anselmo, and so we're lucky. We got an answer to all of our recruiting that's been going on.
When's he going to be in Stinson?
When we open another day. We do have an incredible nurse practitioner who's here on Fridays, and people love her.
What's her name?
Her name is Carrie Chase.
Chase.
She comes with an assistant and a front desk person. I had hoped to bring them to the luncheon, but I think the luncheon is sold out, and we'll get them to the Village Association meeting that's on the community center meeting that is on February 6th, so we'll introduce them.
You can't make room at the luncheon for one person who's the medical.
Two. It would be. You
probably
can.
Try harder.
Try harder.
Yeah.
Bob could fill it.
Really?
Yeah. Okay.
You can set up a kid's table and I'll sit at that and you can give them mine.
Well, then stay tuned. Maybe they'll be here on this Friday. We have also requested Dennis Rodoni's input on what to do with the Stinson Beach facility. And we've requested it twice. So we're waiting his visit to help us decide just how to go forward. Our dentist is looking at going into the schools. Our dental program is, because we have a bus, is booked for several months ahead. Mm. It's an incredible success. Mm. We are also, as a team, going into the schools in the Shoreline District to work with students on medical issues or whatever comes up for the school. And I just, I have, unfortunately, only in Spanish, Coastal Health Alliance covered California for sure. I put one in English on the bulletin board, but we have a person named Silvana Castro, and she's on, she has an office in our administrative building, and she will help anyone who doesn't have insurance get insurance if they can, if they're eligible. I had the personal experience of going with my daughter who lost her insurance this week, and she came away with the help of this wonderful woman who's been with us 9 years. She came away with insurance and a way of having herself and her two children covered. Use them. It's an incredible service.
Where's her office?
It's on 3rd Street. It's in Point Reyes. It's spread the word.
What's her name?
Her name is Silvana Castro.
To put it next to a Stinson too.
I can do that. And it is on the bulletin board in English. And then I've passed out several in Espanol, but she makes it happen.
That's wonderful.
It is incredible.
And reminder always that it takes Kaiser.
It always, yes, it does take Kaiser. And I'm going to talk to Maury, who helped us make the sign that's hanging down here, the poor little sign, needs attention. It isn't that we don't love the place, but
that's right. Well, are we going to modify the sign to reflect these new days that the center is going to be open?
Oh, I hope so.
Note the we.
He's Mr. Sign.
Well, okay, so you'll give me some information as to how you want the sign.
It needs to read exactly the way it is. It's just that the edges are, yeah.
And things change.
I know. Thank you. That's my report.
How about a report from the Water District from Mr. Sign?
Oh, yes, Mr. Sign. We had a good month. We got our coastal development permit for our new well up at the treatment plant. And the Village Association wrote a very, very good supporting letter that I'm sure was helpful. The hearing officer was very complimentary about the Water District and how we have prepared our application. And so we came away from that meeting too, very, very good. We had a good meeting, as Lisa reported. Mia reported in Via Lisa with the GGNRA regarding sea level rise and what we're going to do about that. It was a preliminary meeting that I hope will keep the dialogue going between the GGNRA and the Water District. The meeting was well attended by three people from the GGNRA, Steve Ortega, Mia Monroe, and one other gentleman by the name of Greg, who is very high up in the agency regarding real estate transactions. So we felt very good about that. That's about all I have to report.
Thanks, Maury.
What about plans for DCEL?
We are looking at the DSAL. We have a subcommittee of Sandy Cross and Jim Zell who are looking at that. That's in the preliminary stages. We've had presentations from consultants, one of which was with the, or worked with the Water District in...
down south.
No.
In Orange County?
No, the Marin County.
Oh, excuse me.
Yeah.
Thank you. Barbara, you're here.
She's meditating.
So we are going forward with that.
I'd just like to add to Maury's report that I had a leak alert come to us last week from the Water District because we're computerized, we're in the system, and it's very smooth. And I urge anybody who's not on that system to sign up.
Mm-hmm. How do we do that again?
There were instructions in your monthly water bill, but go into the office, and they will give you your owner's identification number. I think it's your assessor's parcel number.
Okay.
And then you establish a password, which you normally would. And
good.
It's a good service.
I've heard that you can see your daily or monthly water.
You can, and if there's a leak, they will notify you via email, and so rather than running up a tremendous water bill, you can nip it in the bud, so to speak.
Thank you. Flood Advisory Board. Community Church? Jamie?
So I'm on the Flood Advisory Board. I want to say that at the library, there's a wonderful exhibition on East Coop Creek, where it used to go, how it used to extend itself. Historically, I'm sorry, I hope I'm not speaking out of turn, but you maybe all already know this, but it's of particular interest about where Ethan Creek used to go and how it's changed and the mapping over since the 1800s. Anyway, it's a terrific exhibit. It's going to be there for a while. It's the Historical Society. As to the Flood Board itself, we had a meeting. We are trying to get the minutes for that meeting. But basically, the status is that we have permission to dredge at a couple of the cayes, those cayes where the bridge is the lowest and therefore the threat of the water coming down impacting that danger to the bridge itself and also flowing out from there. Not all the cayes, and we have the permission to dredge behind the park side, such as to make it, to restore that catchment basin. The idea of which is we have a flood, we have a landslide up on the hill. It rains like the dickens, down it comes. Hopefully the gravel and rocks and stuff that are carried down get collected there, deposited there, and then less fill goes down into what I call the forest, where that area is between Highway 1 and actually the parking lot. And we had a great example in December of this year, where it rained like the dickens and it maxed out East Coop Creek. And the good news is that when that happens, the creek in that forest area, you're with me about that, right? Sort of from the park side down to wherever to the first cayet, that whole area, goes over its banks, casts itself naturally towards the parking lot, flows across the asphalted area of the parking lot, and ultimately goes into the ocean down at the far northwest corner. The berm's high enough there to protect Pinos, and what remains in the water course is not so great as to flood other areas. So sort of the natural self-release that the creek has acquired, Mother Nature deciding what it really wants to do with itself, flows that waters out. I see the piece of property that's right on the creek, and the water came, filled the channel, and maybe this much higher than the channel, and all carried itself down off into the lagoon. So that's sort of the good news. And we've urged the county and the staff that makes appeals to Fish and Wildlife and the other agencies that are concerned about the creek to continue to create these glory holes, the idea of which is that as silt comes in, it'll fill in the glory holes, and further, that as it sweeps by, it'll take the channel itself and the gravel that's in the bottom of the channel and move it down a little bit till it gets to the glory holes, and that will gradually, over the course of time, deepen the channel, which has, over the course of time, filled in. So we haven't gotten the staff to say, yes, we'll go back and apply for all of those glory holes. As I said, they've only applied this year, and that work's been done, and we're ready, and we can dig out the channel one more time in the midst of the storm, should that be problematic.
Thank you, Jamie.
I think that's an unfortunate reference to what? Glory holes.
We were welcome.
I suggest we strike that from our minutes and find some other term that be a little more neutral.
Catchment basin sounds good.
There you go.
So whatever the proper term is, anyway, the idea is to dig something. They get a backhoe, they suck it on the deal, it's got a 20-foot reach and a 4-foot bucket, and it digs 20 feet away and 4 feet down.
And it's glorious.
It's glorious.
Holy, some might say.
Formerly there was a hole.
Given our resonance. Anyway, so it sweeps out.
Well, the theory is you're catching it, too, so you can go back and scoop it out again, right?
Yeah, the idea is to be able to scoop it again. And then they take that and they use it for road base or something like that. They keep it.
What does Fish and Game have to say about all this? I know that there's always an officer on site when that excavation is done.
They come ahead of time with window screen on two poles, and they kind of get all the fish collected, and they put them into buckets and little aerators in them, and then they take them wherever they take them, and then, well, I mean, in mine, actually, last time they found a steelhead that was 6 inches long.
Wow.
Kind of cool, right? Anyway, they took it down below Arroyo and put them in the creek there, I think, and then they're supposed to kind of work their way back up. So that's what they say about, so it's coordinated with them. I mean, it's from them that we get the permission.
Right.
That's really the issue. Mm. And it's the staff that applies for that.
Right.
And it takes time and money, and they ding our budget.
That means a steelhead has come up and spawned. That's wonderful. There used to be a run behind the park site.
Well, we're trying. I mean, that's actually the flood board has these sort of dual missions, I must confess, at our own instigation. And that is not only to make the channel deep enough to make sure we don't get flooded, but also to make it, we say salmon, but steelhead anyway, compatible. That is that we create obstructions in the creek that are sufficient to provide hiding space for the little fingerlings. That's the real danger. Because, anyway, so Sam Steel had come up, they spawn, they create little guys, and then you get a big rain, and because the creek historically, we just put a front loader in it, and we ran it up the creek. I mean, I said we, but, you know, in the 40s, 50s, 60s, whatever. So that's what, when it got too much stuff in the creek, they just stick the thing in. So the channel is straight, so there's... So it's good for flooding in that it whisks the water out of the way, but it's a little difficult, but it's impossible for fish because they get washed away. So that's the sort of balance. And we're trying to do both, actually.
That's great.
Yeah. Mike, I apologize. I have to leave. Can I just say one other thing?
Sure.
If I may, it's just a little... out on the this part of the beach, there is a quail jawbone. Kind of cool if you haven't seen it. A whale jawbone. It's 13 feet long.
Yeah.
It's white. It's opposite the south parking lot. And you can go out and have a look at it.
It's gone.
Oh,
did Don Jolly get it?
No, I collected
Don
it.
Don Jolly. Did you get it, John?
I collected it. So what I did is I contacted the National Oceanic...
NOAA.
So I contacted them. Spoke to people in Santa Rosa, emails to, so what the process is you can register any kind of mammal bone or something. If you find them, some kind of beachcomber registration process. So you're allowed to collect these things as long as you register them within 30 days. And part of the registration process is they send out an agent or an officer to inspect it to make sure it's not of museum quality or any kind of scientific value.
Uh-huh.
And if they deem it not so, then you may keep it.
Yeah, got it.
Yeah. So, yeah.
So where is it?
It's in my backyard. It's very, it's quite warm. Originally I thought it was driftwood, but then closer inspection, I thought, wow, that's really neat.
Yeah.
So
let's just talk. I called GGNRA and the natural resources people to sort of say, hey, we got this thing. And but it's very cool. It's 30 feet long. I think it's a gray, not a humpback. It sort of looked. And
it was a baleen whale of some sort.
A baleen whale of some sort.
Worship of the beach.
Yeah, washed up on the beach.
6 years ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well,
but
it just
moved.
I think you need to put it in the front yard, John.
What I wanted to suggest, actually, and I wanted the reason I'm saying this out loud, and I hope I'm not speak out of turn here, that the Village Association would say, hey, this is cool, we ought to put it on display. And the fact is that it has these sort of nice flat surfaces about it, such that we could mount it, make it a bench or something like that, so that it actually has some utility, but at the same time, put a photograph or a drawing of the whale and sort of say, here's this, look, it's 13 feet long. That means that the whale itself was so long. And either put it in GGNRH property or in the community, in the park part there. Because first of all, it'd be interesting and we'd kind of learn something. And also, it's kind of utilitarian. You guys, you can kind of sit on it and what have you.
Village Green, perhaps?
Yeah, the Village Green, that's what I meant to say.
I'm for that.
Yeah, good.
How about the Village Green? Is the Village Green in favor of this?
Village Green is silent. Let whatever happens happen.
Yeah,
there is a board, but I'm sure they probably approve.
No.
Maybe you can hang it on the wall, on the fence there. The
do you have the contact information for the Village Green board?
No, but I think that's way ahead of us. I mean, we don't even have permission to have the thing.
Yeah,
because
it's John's at the moment.
No.
Take it and secure it.
John has it.
That's illegal.
It's John's.
John has it.
John is the...
He's a certified beachcomber.
So my understanding is I would never become the official owner. It gets registered to allow me to.
Yeah.
So I'm all for that idea.
Yeah, this is great. I mean, we'll... Anyway, we'd like the endorsement of the Village Association.
No one owns it.
Can I just make my motion? My motion is the Village Association endorses the notion of taking this asset and using it in, educationally and constructively within the village.
I think that we would support that, but I think we need to let this evolve a bit. John, you need to figure out,
so
is it registered? Do they want to take it?
I have an outstanding email that I'm waiting for a reply on that.
And then if,
three people.
If, yeah. There's, if they don't want it and you've got it and you think it's a good idea, then let's talk about how to do it.
Sure.
I think it...
The reason I'm saying this, Mike, is because I get the feeling from at least the GGNRA side of the jurisdiction over this resource that they're going to sort of debate about it within themselves. Mm-hmm. And it would be nice to have the Village Association say, hey, yeah, we're mindful of this, and we support the notion, may we use it constructively, educationally within the village we like this or whatever.
So, John, does the GGNRA have grabbing rights for this thing at any point?
I don't know. I suspect that the agent that will be sent will be probably from them, because all those people I spoke to, they're not used, they don't know what the process is.
I see.
Even though there is an existing process, they're not used to people calling up to ask. So, but, you know, going back to, I don't think it's been out there for several years.
No. I think it's within the last. It's still oily.
It smells.
It smells. I mean, there's oils.
Poor
Pamela's
hand. His arm is
going to
fall.
Aren't I being patient? Yes. Okay.
You're not going to talk about the propane tank.
Observing protocol.
Okay.
No, Don Jolly is the middle school science teacher over at the school. He specializes in found bones. If you ever go into his classroom, the whole thing is covered with bones. He's been through this process more times. Mm. Since we're always looking at building a better relationship with our schools and our kids, and we're interested educationally, I'll help you contact Don Jolly. He knows every process and all the ways of getting through. And when you say education and teacher and believe a students in school, they tend to say, oh, we've been down this path before. These are reasonable people. We can work with them.
And to answer somebody's question, it took three people to carry it.
Smelly people.
Good friends.
So we want the endorsement of and the enthusiastic support and the and no monetary contribution from the Village Association, if we may. So that when we talk to people, we say, yeah, Skins and Beach is with you.
Well, I would second what is or isn't a motion.
Yeah.
I think the motions originate at the board, but I'm not sure. I'm only reacting in that absolutely I personally support it, but I don't know enough of what's going on.
I don't think the situation is clear enough for us to make a determination about what to support exactly.
Yeah, that's
at this point.
I mean, in a general sense, I think we support anything that can be done to make this discovered resource available and enjoyed by everyone.
So let me see. If I hit a hang up with the registration process, then I'll probably talk to you and follow that route.
Right.
And you can also contact us if then Village Association support would be useful.
Sure. And if I'm successful in registering it, then we'll
put it right here every Saturday.
In a few years.
Yeah. Anything else? Do I those? I guess we're at West Marin Senior Services.
Yeah. Well, I'd like to thank you again for your grant for our movement classes for seniors in Skins and Beach Community Center. I have been in contact.
Thanks,
with
Jamie.
Some of the exercise teachers there to see if we can work something out for the new year and how they'd like to go about it. And I am now a certified Matter of Balance Falls Prevention coach, took a training at Marin General Hospital. That, however, is probably the first classes. These are series of eight 2-hour classes. It's not just movement, but it's more cognitive behavioral approaches. are going to be in Port Reyes, and I'll probably be helping coach there. It takes two coaches, and there's only one in West Marin at this point. It's me. So if you know of anybody that you think would be interested or could benefit from, they have to be at the stage where they're actually not in denial that they're at risk. And that's all of us are at risk of falls, of course, but at a certain level of frailty and age and medical condition, those risks become almost catastrophic. A fall or two falls or the third fall is usually the one. And just as something I learned, it's almost 70% of all admissions to the trauma center, through the trauma center, I'm sorry, to a hospital bed are from falls. They were seniors' falls. So that's because we're a much older county, of course, but still, it's pretty overwhelming. And so they're finally saying, well, we need to get out in front of this. And so this is one of the things that's being done. And so hopefully, we'll get some Stinson Beach seniors that want to go to Point Reyes. I can see that might not be easy, but we'll try to move things down here as we get more coaches, hopefully. So.
Don Damas, who does the Pilates class and a stretch class, is interested gentle movement class.
That's, yeah. So I'll talk to her as well, of course.
Yeah,
you know, sort of with people I have direct contact with. But.
Okay, thanks. Committee reports, just looking through them. Traffic, Lee is gone. Flood mitigation, we've talked about. Compliance review, nothing new that I've seen.
Mm-hmm.
Keep the beach clean. It's a sporadic let's do something committee. Local coastal program amendments. I think things are just the same. Are there any hearings set?
Mm-hmm.
Advisory committee to address sea level rise. Larry Crutcher hasn't been around in a while, but we might look and see whether that's still a vital committee. For the good of the order, anything from the board?
Do we have elections coming up that we need to notify people of?
Yeah, they're in February, I believe,
okay.
At the annual meeting.
So we have
meeting.
A little time yet.
So at the next meeting, we can establish
a nominee
committee.
Yep.
And Sam, can you remember, do we take nominations from the floor as well at the annual meeting, or is it the slate is presented at the annual meeting?
The slate is the slate on the vote
rules.
Takes place at the annual meeting, and in January the nominations are announced.
Right. And what's the lead time on the nomination? Does it have to be 30 days, or is it?
No, the vote. The no.
I mean, and notifying regarding the slate.
10 days before the election.
So we can form the committee next meeting. Pamela, for the
good of the order. Part of Mia's report was about the King High tides and what's coming up, and that up and down the coast, students are being taught about the King High tide, especially those in the coastal areas. And I'm doing it. It's a lot of fun. That's the upside. On the downside, and I've already spoken to Pat Norton about it, classes are coming out to measure the height of the King High tides. Some of those students shouldn't be on the beach.
Shouldn't they be dangerous?
Semi-supervised during the King High tides. And the unions and teacher unions and others are alerting everybody, if you're taking a class to the beach, make sure you have sufficient chaperones and volunteers to assist for the kids. We've all been, I've been knocked down by a King High tide, but it came much faster than I thought it was.
Wow.
You live here any length of time and you go out on the beach, you're going to get wet. With small kids, even with some of our teenagers, of course the danger is much greater. So I just wanted to put it out there. If you're out on the beach, you see a class, you know the King High tides are coming, just kind of keep a grandparently eye, most of us are grandparents now. And if you see them starting to get in trouble, yell. Let the teacher know, let the volunteers know, because King High tides are nothing to fool with.
What's the date on that?
They're doing third, fourth, so tomorrow they're starting third, fourth, and fifth. They're doing another super day in January,
mm-hmm.
but other teachers saying, well, I can't go on a field trip then, so we're going to do it at another day.
When there's no high tide.
I'm trying to download the tide chart here, could check the times for tomorrow. Do you have it? You know what?
I don't think I've got it.
Also, if you're getting off Highway 101 at Manzanita's, which kind of
there's the King.
You don't put up a sign.
No, you just.
You just suddenly you're in it, and that's it's not good.
Not good.
Yeah.
No, they close.
I'm not going that way.
Not always.
So there
is this tide. Was the tide this morning at King High Tide?
Not yet.
No, tomorrow.
Yeah.
It's just usually about 7 feet.
Seven.
But that's not 7 feet.
But it takes out all the cars in that parking lot. People have lost their electrical system. They're getting flooded.
That's at Manzanita.
But that's
well, that is at Manzanita,
which
also floods.
It's both
fun.
It's lots of fun.
It's
with the right attitude,
it's
a park
time
road house.
And the beginning of January.
Right.
Unreal.
Yes.
Anything more for the good of the order? Thank you, Pamela.
That's pretty.
I move we adjourn.
I second.
Yes. Here, here.
Thank you all for coming.
Can I come see your
Sure.
I will try your